Hello and welcome to The Convex Conversation with me, journalist and broadcaster Helen Fospero. Today's guest resigned from one of the most highly coveted jobs in glossy magazine publishing to launch her own startup. Anna Jones was the first female chief executive of Hearst UK, the publisher of titles like Marie Claire, Men's Health, Cosmopolitan, Harper's Bazaar and Esquire. She set up Albright with her friend Debbie Wasco, a successful entrepreneur and founder of Love Home Swap, which was sold for $53 million. Albright is aimed at empowering women and supporting them at all stages of their career, and it's been full on since their first club opened its doors to members in London in 2018. Anna, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, I remember being in your office in Soho about 3 years ago, just after you'd handed in your resignation at Hearst, and you sharing a bit of your plan and your vision for Albright. It's been a really wild and exciting ride since then, hasn't it?
It certainly has. Yeah, it's been a white knuckle ride. I think any entrepreneurial journey is a white knuckle ride. And I can't really believe that it's been 3 years. We've done a lot, but we've still got a lot more to do.
So tell us, first of all, by way of introduction, Anna, what Albright is and the story behind it.
So really, Albright is a network for professional women. We like to think of them as smart-minded women. We have members clubs. We've got three members clubs, two in London and one in Los Angeles. And we are soon, well, hopefully soon to open in New York. The premise for the business is that when women come together, amazing things happen. So we have neon signs in all of our clubs that say sisterhood works. And we really believe that. We believe that by women coming together, inspiring each other, working together, networking, that we can really change the world and we can change what happens for women in work. We also, as well as the members clubs, we also have a digital membership. So for those who are not physically located close to one of our clubs, they can still be part of the sisterhood, which is how we think of it, by being a digital member. And effectively what that means is that they can join a community of women all over the world. They can connect with each other. They can upskill. So we have the Albright Academy, which is training courses for women. They can find mentors, business buddies, and they can basically broaden their network. And I think one of the reasons we started the business, and I'm sure we'll come on to talk about that, but is that there has always been in existence an old boys network. And what we are, my observation of working with women and managing many women throughout my career, is that they haven't networked in the same way that men have for centuries. And that's something that we wanted to change, because obviously you have more opportunities and you have more paths open to you through the more connections you have professionally. So this is something that we wanted to help women achieve.
And why do you think it is, Anna, that women haven't networked in the same way as men do?
I think that women are traditionally way better actually at networking with their families, their friends, their colleagues, you know, so the people who are sort of close to them. Generally, what we see, or what I have seen throughout my career, is that women are juggling a lot in their lives. And so when they're at work, they've got their head down and they're just trying to do a good job. And they're not necessarily thinking about the fact that they might not know somebody in a different industry, and that they're not reaching out in the way that men have been doing for centuries. Because, you know, if you think about many of the successful men that you know that are captains of industry, CEOs, non-executives, whatever, they do tend to know each other. It doesn't matter what industry that they're in. Whereas women, I think, have traditionally just got their head down and been focused on doing a good job.
You were in one of the most dynamic positions in magazine publishing. What tempted you, Anna, to give it all up and you know, lose the security of a salaried, well-paid job to set up your own thing? Has there been an entrepreneurial itch inside that's needed a scratch?
So I think definitely I've had an entrepreneurial itch throughout my career, and I've been lucky enough to be given different opportunities throughout my career within corporates, so that when I've perhaps thought about, you know, jumping out of the corporate world and doing something different, I've been given a different role or a different responsibility. But I always knew that I wanted to do my own thing. And for sure, I had a job that I absolutely loved. You know, I was very fortunate to work in magazine publishing, which is Hearst was a very dynamic company. I worked with incredible people. You know, I had 1,000 people in the company at that time, and, you know, working on some of the best brands, the best media brands in the world. But I had worked in the magazine business for many, many years, and I had a vision for what I wanted to achieve at Hearst as the CEO. And that was to think about those brands in a different way and diversify them away from just print. So think about the experiences around those brands and think about a digital strategy. And over the sort of 3.5 years that I was the CEO, and I had been the COO before that, so I was a sort of internal candidate, if you like, so I'd been there for a number of years, I felt like I'd achieved what I wanted to achieve. And then for me, the catalyst really was I turned 40. I was starting to think about what's next. You know, I imagined I could have sat in that corner office for the next decade. And, you know, and that would have been great in many ways. But I felt like I had the energy and the drive, and I had the desire to run my own company. And the catalyst for me was meeting my co-founder, Debbie Wasco, who you mentioned in your introduction, who's an incredible entrepreneur. She's a serial entrepreneur, in fact, and Love Home Swap that she was running when I met her was her third company. And I guess we had this serendipitous moment. We met at a party. We were introduced by a mutual friend who said, you two should be friends. And we very quickly bonded. In fact, I remember the party specifically because we sort of stood in the corner of the room and just spoke to each other all evening, which was almost like you've pulled at a party. And we became friends, and we started to meet fairly regularly. I guess we had a lot in common because we lived in the same sort of area of London. We both had 2 children. We were both CEOs. We were both CEOs in industries that had very few female CEOs. So we sort of bonded over that. And as we met over the kind of months after we had first been introduced, I guess the conversations were around, well, where are all the women? You know, where are they? Why are there so few? You know, she was a woman, a CEO and a founder in tech. And there was probably about 20 known, you know, or well-known CEOs in tech. And for me, when I became CEO at that time, I was the only CEO, a female CEO in the industry at the time. And it was something that we realized was a shared passion. And as we started to discuss what we wanted to do next, you know, what we wanted to do when we really grew up, the idea for Albright formed. And, you know, it was really this notion of sort of Project Albright, which we had scribbled on the back of a napkin, actually, I think over gin and tonics one evening. And, you know, Madeleine Albright's famous quote, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. So we called this thing Project Albright because we could see a big white space for a business that was about, it was definitely a business for profit, but that had purpose at its heart. And that was to convene women, to help them upskill, to help them connect, and ultimately to help them inspire themselves to feel more confident to achieve their career dreams.
Have you felt throughout your career, Anna, you've broken through the glass ceiling, but were you very much aware that too many women in business were getting a raw deal, and particularly in the investment arena?
I was aware of it, but I don't think I was fully aware of the statistics until Debbie and I started thinking about this whole space and what we wanted to do with Albright. And really, those statistics were galvanizing for us when we were thinking about what the business might look like. And, you know, I think hopefully people are familiar with the statistics now, but, you know, only 2% of venture capital going to back female founders. And actually, if you the Rose review that Alison Rose did last year was, you know, even more shockingly, that only one penny in the pound goes to back female co-founders. But also within corporates, you know, it's only one in six C-suite roles are held by women. And again, you know, that's shocking because we've had lots and lots of conversations about women on boards, but we hadn't really had the conversations about why so little investment was going to back female founders, and also why so few women were in positions of executive power. Because if you think about it, those C-suite roles, that's, you know, chief marketing officer, chief creative officer, chief financial officer, those are the people who are actually making the decisions about business. They are running the businesses, they're making the hiring decisions, the spending decisions. And, you know, ultimately, we're never going to reach equality unless we have more women in those positions. So I think, yes, I was aware of it, of course, because I was used to being the only woman in the boardroom, if you like, and there was no other women on the board when I joined Hearst. And I had very similar experiences, you know, our industry board, I was the only woman sitting around the table. So I was aware of it, but I guess I probably thought that publishing might have been an outlier, when in actual fact, when we really looked at the statistics, it was across the board. And I'm sorry to say that the statistics are not really getting any better. Yes, we've moved the dial for women on boards, and there are lots of non-exec roles now held by women. But what I'm interested in is executive positions, because they're the people who are actually running the companies, and also capital going to back female founders. We know so many amazing female founders. You know, one of the things that we do at Allbright is we run female founder pitch days every month. We run them in London, LA. And, you know, when we started the business, many investors said to us, we never see any female founders. They just don't exist. And we said, they really do, because we know loads of them. And, you know, to prove it, every single month we have 6 to 8 incredible female founders pitching for investment into their businesses. So they are out there, but we've got to do more to support them.
I think the other statistic I found when I was sort of, you know, looking into your story, Anna, is that female-run companies deliver a better return on investment, 35% on average. I mean, that's a staggering statistic too, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things we wanted to do with Allbright was to really get those statistics talked about, get them out there. And, you know, they are being talked about more, which I think is fantastic. But I think, you know, we need to understand that diversity pays, and ultimately money follows money, right? So the more we realize that women are delivering great returns and that diverse boards and diverse management teams are delivering better returns, the more likely we are to see change.
Anna, you got to C-level in your career and then often found yourself the only female. Just wondering how you got there. Was there an element of luck involved? Is it simply hard graft? And did your upbringing perhaps play a role?
Well, look, there's a few things. For sure, luck and timing plays a massive part in anyone's career, really. People don't talk about it enough, and they sort of say, well, it was all just down to me and I'm amazing talent. But, you know, luck is definitely there. You have to work really, really hard. Like, all through my career, you know, I'm a northerner and I have this thing about northern grafters and people who, you know, sort of, I always assumed I was going to have to work harder than anyone else. I was always somebody who put my hand up for things. So I didn't hold back. You know, if there was something that needed to be done, if there was a project that no one else really fancied, or, you know, you're sitting around a table and someone's like, okay, this, we should look into this, or this is a challenge or a problem, who wants to do it? And you didn't say who wants to do it. I would sort of say, I'll do it. And I think throughout my career, I got to be seen as a bit of a fixer. So if there was a problem, you know, you could throw me in it and I would hopefully try and find a way around it. And that was sort of part of my reputation. You know, people ask a lot about the difference between mentors and sponsors. And I would say I've had a couple of sponsors, if you like, in my career. And those are people who take an active role in your career. They're not just saying, oh, you're good at this or you're good at that, or they're not sort of reflecting you back on yourself. They're actually saying, it's that person. That's the person for the promotion. That's the person who should be doing that role. And I was lucky enough to have a couple of people in my career who took that sort of active role, which definitely helped. I think also I'm very passionate. I'm always very passionate about what I do. So for me to become the first female CEO at Hearst, I think the board in the US, because Hearst is an American company, could see how passionate I was about the brands. They knew me. I was an internal candidate, so I was a known quantity. And I had an idea. You know, I had ideas about what I wanted to do. I was quite good at galvanizing the teams. And I think I probably had a bit of a fresh approach. But for sure, a lot of it is luck. And I think your question about why is it something in my childhood? Well, obviously, I have thought a lot about that since I started Albright. And it's probably unsurprising to those people who know me that I'm one of four girls. So I'm the eldest of four sisters. And I was brought up in rural Yorkshire in the north of England. And I was basically brought up on a farm. So we were pretty isolated. OK, we had no Wi-Fi. I certainly wasn't doing Zoom calls or on Instagram. And my sort of window into culture and into the urban world was through magazines. So I was definitely crazy about magazines. And I was brought up by a feminist mother. My mum is Danish. So she was, as many Scandinavians, are brought up with equality from the right from the beginning. So my dad became a feminist because he had four girls.
He had no choice,
I had no choice, exactly. When my parents had yet another girl, the local sort of farming community would say, oh, I'm sorry about that. You know, anyway, better luck next time. You know, and so that again sort of galvanized my father to be a feminist. And I was brought up to believe there was nothing I couldn't do. So I really, the reason I mentioned being in a sort of isolated community, my grandparents lived on the farm with us and my parents, my aunt was there, and, you know, it was relatively isolated. And so we really believed there was nothing we couldn't do. And I believed that through my education. I believed that through, I studied business at Newcastle University in the business school there. And it wasn't really until I popped out into the world of work that I realized that actually it wasn't a level playing field for women. And that was a bit of a shock. And I guess that little kernel in me has driven me to think about what I want to do to try and make a difference.
Were you surprised, Anna, how receptive women have been to Albright? Because you've grown extraordinarily quickly in the 3 years or so since you've set it up. I mean, has there been a voracious appetite from like-minded women to join the sisterhood, if you like, and get cracking?
There really has. And, you know, my background is a marketeer. You know, that was really my, if I think about my trade, if you like, I think of myself still as a marketeer. And when we came up with the idea for Albright, we sensed a change. We sensed that there was a sort of zeitgeist shift and the conversation around women and equality was getting louder. But this was before Me Too and Time's Up had hit the headlines. We could feel something, but we didn't know for sure whether there was going to be the appetite. So when we opened our first club, which is on Rathbone Place in Fitzrovia in London, it's quite a small, it's a lovely Georgian townhouse. And we announced we were going to launch Albright and we were going to launch this club in the media. And people were sort of interested, I think, in what I was going to do and what Debbie was going to do. And, you know, it was unusual for two female founders who had some sort of reputation to come together. So we announced it in the press, and overnight we had hundreds, I think we had 450 women said overnight, I'm in. You know, yeah, I don't know what it is. And we're like, you haven't seen it. You don't really know what it is. I don't care. I'm in. And we very quickly realized that first space was going to be too small. So we started looking for a bigger space. And we opened a much bigger space on Maddox Street in Mayfair. And we also opened one in LA last year. And at the same time, we had a big outpouring from people saying, well, okay, how do I join the sisterhood then if I'm not close to those physical members clubs? Hence, we launched our digital platform so that we could offer digital membership at the same time. And I think what I have seen, the big shift is that even 5 years ago, I think if we'd launched this, we wouldn't have seen quite the appetite that we have seen. But I think what's happened is that now the statistics, and if you think about it, the gender pay gap conversations, the boardroom conversations, the executive conversations are happening. And I think that women, rather than actually being irritated about it and just, you know, standing at the sidelines and annoyed, they're actually saying, hang on a minute, I am going to jump in the driving seat of my career and I am going to make a change and I'm going to make it happen for myself and I'm going to make it happen for the people around me because now is the time. And I think that has been a shift. I really believe that has been a shift. And obviously you get a snowball effect because the more smart-minded women you put together and the more inspiration that they get from one another and ideas about how to navigate their careers and how to think about their actually delivering on their ambitions and how they are hiring each other and they are funding each other and they are looking for ideas and pragmatic solutions from one another that they can bring back into their own careers, we're starting to see a big shift.
Is it refreshing for you, Anna? Because I know you're quite an impatient person. I'm sure you'd say that yourself. But
yeah,
seeing
yeah.
how quickly you can make change, because when you're in a corporate environment, of course, there are many more sort of hoops to jump through on that front. And do you enjoy seeing, you know, an idea that you might have scribbled perhaps in the old days on a napkin with Debbie suddenly come to life much quicker than you could have done it in the corporate arena?
That has been the absolute joy of jumping into the entrepreneurial world, because I am definitely an impatient person and you can make change happen quickly if you just move. And hopefully I've sort of proven it to myself, because, you know, this was all theoretical, because when you're working in a big corporate, to your point, it takes time. There are committees and there are sign-off processes and, you know, and that's as it should be in many ways, because you're dealing with much bigger sums of money and many more people and you've got shareholders. Having said that, it can feel like you're wading through treacle. And I think when you are running your own company, and particularly when you've got such a like-minded co-founder, Debbie and I have different ways of working and different experiences, but we have the same vision and we have the same appetite for moving at pace. It's unbelievably refreshing. So, you know, for example, when COVID-19 hit, we had a strategy, we had a digital strategy and a plan sort of for over the next 6 to 12 months. And within the first 6 days after COVID was sort of hit the UK, we knew we were going to have to make some big changes. We knew we were going to have to close the clubs. And so we brought forward our digital strategy. We pulled together our team and a team of people who were doing very different things. So, you know, someone who's working in brand partnerships or somebody who'd been working in finance. And we said, look, we can make this happen in the next 4 weeks, not the next 6 months. We can take all of our content online. We can galvanize that digital community much more quickly if we throw ourselves into it. And we did it. You know, there's no committees, there's no sort of sign off. We just say, go, go, go. Have a small amount of people who are very, you know, sitting around that sort of top table who are very nimble and very can do. And I absolutely love that about the business.
It's funny, I was just reading an article in the New York Times that Madeleine Albright, you mentioned Madeleine Albright, obviously, because the club's sort of named, you know, inspired by Madeleine Albright. And she was talking about resilience in the face of COVID-19. And, you know, she's getting on a bit now and her quotes and her words are still so inspirational. Has she inspired your wider mission as well, Anna?
I mean, she's just an amazing woman, but I think it was really that quote about a special place in hell for women who don't help other women that has been that sort of driving force. Now, when we think about Sisterhood Works, though, I will say that to us, the sisterhood can also include enlightened men, right? This is not a sort of us v them kind of thing. You know, our biggest investors are men, and they have been amazing, sort of absolutely on the journey, who are complete believers that equality pays. You know, in all of our clubs, men are very welcome as our guests. And if you go into any of the clubs, you'll always see men there for either meetings or, you know, date night or whatever it may be. So we are very much around men being on this journey with us. But what we see and what has galvanized us is that thought that if we come together amazing things will happen. And that is what we see every day with our community, definitely in the clubs and now more and more online, where, you know, women come up to me and say, Albright has changed my life. I wrote a book and I had no idea. It's the first book I'd ever written because, you know, I was a consultant and I had no idea where I was going to get it published. And I met my publisher in the Albright. Or, you know, I was looking for a co-founder to start this business and I met them in the Albright. We have lovely salons in all of our clubs and I've been in the salon before and people all sort of talk to me. And I was in there a couple of months ago and one of our members was getting her hair done and she was chatting away. She had a lot of nervous energy. She was chatting away to me. And I said, oh, you know, you look great. Are you getting your hair done? She said, yeah, I'm getting my hair done because I am going in to talk to my boss about getting that. I want to run this department that I've been, you know, in for a long time. And I'm going, basically she was putting on a game face. And she said she'd heard a talk the week before at the Albright by someone that's sort of in a similar industry who'd talked about negotiation and kind of getting what you want and how to have those conversations. And it had given her the impetus to go in and have that conversation. And so that sort of stuff is incredibly galvanizing when you're surrounded by it every day.
I was going to ask you where men fit in, but interestingly, your first chairman is a man, isn't he? Alan Layton. I think I'm right in saying former chief exec of ASDA and current chair of the cooperative group.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. He's a chair of a number of businesses. And we got a bit of flack when we appointed Alan. And we do actually have to remind people that we did appoint him rather than the other way around because, you know, it was a man. But look, for us, we were very mindful about that hire. We wanted somebody who could help us make a difference. Now, Debbie and I have both been non-execs ourselves. We both have a lot of executive experience. We've got some incredible women, mainly women actually, in our senior leadership team, but we do also have a couple of awesome men as well. And number one, we wanted a bit of balance around the sort of board. We wanted somebody who had direct access to all of the, let's be honest, men who are running the boardrooms and running the executive committees within the corporates around the country. And we wanted somebody who had a different perspective to us, but one that would be helpful. Because again, I do believe that diversity is important. And Alan has been the most fantastic chairman. He's a really great chairman. He's giving us a different perspective. He's giving us different access, different conversations with people at the top. And it was a very purposeful decision and one that some people didn't agree with, but we are about men being on this journey with us.
I think that's really refreshing, actually. I mean, everybody goes through difficult and challenging times. When you look back at your career, Anna, what are the biggest challenges you've had to face and how have you overcome them?
I think I have to face business challenges every single day. I mean, every single day there is some difficulties. I guess it's quite interesting for me. Probably a couple of things I should talk about. One was when I left the corporate world, bear in mind that Hearst was a big business, that I had been in a company where I was buying and selling businesses. And then I set up my own business. Debbie had been a very successful entrepreneur who had delivered great returns for her shareholders. And here we had this idea that we felt, you know, we'd done a lot of research. We had a very strong business plan. We could see clear space for the business. And then we started having conversations about getting investment. And it was so, so, so difficult. Like most people were just not interested. And that was a shock to me. That was a huge challenge for me because I thought, what? How come? You know, this is really interesting. Like I thought that it would be relatively easy. This Debbie and I, it's going to be fine. And it really, really was challenging, hugely challenging. That whole thing about you have to kiss a lot of frogs. I mean, it is very hard to get capital, even if you're a very experienced entrepreneur and you're an experienced executive. So that was definitely a big learning for me. And that also helped, again, help galvanize us thinking about how we could connect more women to more sources of capital. The other thing I think, which is an ongoing challenge for me and anyone in business is really hiring the right team. It's very difficult. It's difficult when you're in a corporate, but it's very challenging when you are in a startup and now in a scale-up. Because what people think a startup is, quite often, it's not. It's very grubby. It's all about the hustle. It's all about rolling your sleeves up. Doesn't matter if you've got 20 years experience, you're the one that, you know, has to empty the bins, or you're the one that has to, you know, do the filing or whatever it may be. And you have to be really, really comfortable with the high low. And so one of the things that I found very challenging was finding people with the same sort of mindset as Debbie and I, with experience, but the people who were not too grand, if you like, to also get their hands dirty. And luckily for us, we have now got a fantastic team, but it has been challenging. And also challenging that you have to constantly pivot and change direction when you are in an early stage business. And that's not for everybody, because people think that they like change and they think that they like that excitement of that kind of roller coaster of early stage companies. But the reality of it can be quite different. You've got to change direction. You've got to be prepared to throw things out that you've been working on. And so you can't be, although you can be emotional about the mission overall, you can't be that emotional about the how. And actually, that's been something which has been a real challenge and has taken us time, because also we're always in a hurry. So we've definitely made some hiring decisions in a hurry, which haven't been the right ones.
If you found it difficult, Anna, then I'm sure lots of people will, because, I mean, given your CV and your track record at C-level, and Debbie, I love the way you describe her as a serial entrepreneur, but I mean, she really is a serial entrepreneur. So if you two found it difficult, then one can only imagine what people, you know, with a fantastic idea but less experience than you would probably really struggle.
That's absolutely right. I think it is really challenging. And also what we see is that many women don't want to talk about money. And you have to talk about money, and you have to talk about numbers, and you have to talk about your business plan and your P&L if you want to raise capital. So that has been something which we've been trying to focus on as part of our entrepreneurs courses through the Albright Academy, is how to talk about your business, how to do your elevator pitch, how to talk about numbers without feeling embarrassed.
And the Academy, I mean, I know that means a lot to you. Just explain what the Academy is and does, Anna.
So the Albright Academy is basically there to upskill women. We have different courses. So we have one for executives, we have one for entrepreneurs, we have one for freelancers and consultants. And then we're just launching some mini courses. So courses that are specific to negotiation skills or finding your voice or your personal brand. And what they are is basically taking inspiration from women who have been there, done that. And they then have practical experts talking about how you break down that specific topic. And then you have a load of exercises to do yourself so that you can take it back into your own world and back into your own career and practice what you've learned. Because I think, look, I did a business degree myself and it was great, but it was very theoretical. And a lot of conversations around business theory are just that. And what we wanted to do was to be very solutions oriented and very pragmatic and very practical about what things that you can take into your work, which will make a difference to you straight away.
Do you, Anna, magazine loving girl who grew up on a farm in remote area of Yorkshire, feel that with this, you've really found your personal calling now and your sort of mission in life?
I mean, it really gets me out of bed in the morning. I have never, since I've been running this business, I never have that sort of Sunday night / Monday morning feeling about work. There's a lot of work to do, but I can see that we are making a difference. I can see that the conversation around women and women's equality is getting louder. We are doing our bit, and seeing the results and getting the feedback from the women in our community is incredibly galvanizing. So yes, I feel very, very lucky to have a business, a for-profit business, but that has purpose at its heart, because having a purpose to what you do just makes work so much more joyful.
And how ambitious are you, Anna, for it? What does the short-term future look like, do you think, for Albright?
I think we are always very ambitious, impatient and ambitious, like most entrepreneurs. We want to reach as many women as possible. And I think the way that we do that, the clubs are very important to that, but really the way that we do that is through our digital platforms. So for us, and for me being a content person really in my heart, it's how we can use content to reach as many women and join them together in this big sort of sisterhood as possible. And so that is our big focus for the coming 12 months.
You have a son and a daughter. I'm just wondering what your hopes are for Izzy in terms of the future that she'll have as a young woman with probably several careers, I would imagine, in her lifetime.
Well, I think it's a really good point, because I think what we all need to learn, but particularly young people, are to have a sort of tool belt of skills that they can apply to different careers and different industries. So I think it's important for her to start to build up those skills. It'll be very interesting to see what she does, because if you ask her, and every year they have to draw a little picture of what they want to be for their school cards and bags and things, and she always draws something and puts entrepreneur underneath. I don't really know whether she knows exactly what it means, but she said, "Mummy, I find it very hard to explain what you do when people ask me, but I'll just stick with entrepreneur." So look, who knows? Maybe it will rub off.
Anna, thanks very much for being our Convex guest today. It's been fascinating hearing more about the extraordinary journey you've been on over the last few years, especially since we chatted back in the office in Soho. You're so full of passion and ideas and inspiration yourself. So I wish you all the best for continued success and growth with Albright. And let's hope Izzy does become an entrepreneur like Mum.
Thanks so much, Helen.
That was Anna Jones, former CEO of Hearst UK and co-founder of Albright. Thanks for listening to The Convex Conversation. I hope you feel inspired and motivated by Anna's story. Feel free to encourage your friends and family to subscribe at convex.podbean.com, and it's available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. I'll be back next week. Stay safe. Bye for now.